And now if we say, well, you are a Hare Krishna joiner, you have to give up everything. And you have to leave home, you have to move into the temple, you have to surrender all your bank account, bank balance, you have to offer your properties to ISKCON. No, Prabhupada didn't expect us to do that, the householders to do that. Prabhupada said, do whatever you are doing. Only accept the process of Krishna consciousness. That's about all that is expected. Yeah. Anyway, let me see. That's another topic. You know, it will take another 1 hour just to get into that. Briefly, I'll discuss that. Let me take other questions. Right. Yes, what's your question?
Very interesting. Krishna consciousness is the best right now in your mind. My question to you, and if you didn't come, we used to believe in chromosome a long time. Then we learned about gene, which we think is that. And we know DNA molecule. It's more true. How will you know that something is better than Krishna consciousness? What will be the proof? How will you know?
The proof is the informations about the our spiritual identity, right? Informations about the spiritual reality, and informations about the supreme spiritual being, Krishna. And the other consideration here is, you see, knowledge has two ways of receiving it. One is ascending, and the other is descending. The process that you are talking about is the ascending process. Like trying to receive information through our sense perceptions. And establishing certain theory based on that through experimental verification. But the advantage of the descending process is that we don't have to experiment. The knowledge is coming down. So, and we simply have to accept that.
I'm not sure I understand. How will you, somebody comes up with something different, another Purushara, or somebody comes with something different, how do I compare the Krishna consciousness with that? Because this is that.
Okay, I can I can give you from my personal experience. You see, I was interested, actually I became interested about spiritual life, or Indian philosophy, so to say, when I was in Germany in 1970s, early 70s. Prior to that, as you probably know, in India, no one is interested about Indian philosophy. Like, yes, I heard Ramayana and Mahabharata, you know, as a child, but it was, that's about it, right? But to go probe deep into it and find out, you know, what Indian philosophy actually is, was not really there. Now, when I was in Germany, you know, like, I used to see people had all kinds of misconceptions about India and Indian culture, Indian situation. And you know, I knew that all those concepts were wrong. You know, there people were under the impression that in India people are starving and dying. And you know, I used to tell them that, look, I was born in India and I've been brought up in India. I haven't seen a single person dying of starvation. Right? Even the beggars in the street, you know, they look pretty healthy, and I have seen beggars, you know, like standing in the same spot for years together. I mean, there are beggars, you know, like, I don't deny that, but they don't die out of starvation. I haven't seen anyone dying of starvation myself. And not only that, you know, like there's a tendency to establish the glory of India. You know, India is the best, you know. And then while doing that, you know, like I started to realize how little I knew about India. So I started to read. Actually, it's interesting that I started to read about Indian philosophy, Indian scriptures, when I was out of India. And when I was going deep into that, you know, like I realized that just talking about it is not going to help. I have to practice it myself. And I decided to go back to India. Although I read the books and all, and I thought I have some knowledge, I had some understanding. But I knew that in order to properly understand and to properly practice it, I have to find a teacher, I have to find a guru. And so I went back to India and I started to look for a spiritual master. When I went to India, I didn't even go home. I landed in Delhi, and from Delhi I went straight to Haridwar, Rishikesh, and not searching for a guru, you know. And those days I used to think that, I mean, I felt that as soon as I come back to India, I'll find a guru and everything will be easy. But you know, like, I realized that, you know, these people don't know anything. You know, all these so-called sadhus, and especially in that part, you know, of the Himalayas, you know, most of them are into smoking ganja and hashish. And I used to, you know, like, it was very, very disappointing. And then, you know, like, for about 1 year I was searching. And I had a vague understanding about what I was searching, but the understanding was not clear. Right? I met many people, many sadhus, spoke to many of them, and at the end of the day I could see that at least I'm not ready to surrender myself to them. But then, when I practically gave up my search, I came across one book by Srila Prabhupada called The Nectar of Devotion. And when I started to read it, from the very first page, I felt that this was what I was looking for. And that is how it started, right? And mind you, I actually came in contact with ISKCON devotees in 1970. I used to visit a temple. They had a temple in Hamburg. I used to visit that temple. But when I went back to India in 1975 and I was searching for a guru, I never ever thought that ISKCON is the place. ISKCON temple was not too far from my home in Calcutta. I went by ISKCON temples many times, but it never occurred to me to go to the temple and find out what they have to offer. But when I read Srila Prabhupada's books, I got a clear understanding. As I said, from the very first page, you know, it became very clear that this is what I was looking for. And you know, what was convincing is, for the first time, it really occurred to me that God is a person. For the first time it occurred to me that Krishna is God. And Prabhupada didn't just claim that Krishna is God, Prabhupada gave, you know, volumes of proofs why Krishna is God. So what I'm talking about is actually information about that person, God. And the amount of information that we got now from, you know, the Gaudiya Vaishnava culture, that kind of information I couldn't find anywhere else. No, that's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, at least I couldn't find anyone.
But if somebody comes to you, sir, you talk to them. How am I going to decide? That was my question. you decided because you looked at it and he's the best, I accept it.
Yeah, okay.
But something comes up, and you talked about love.
Yeah.
Love causes dukkha. Love causes pain.
Uh-huh.
I don't want pain.
Yeah.
So
okay.
If you start thinking that way, then how do you decide?
Well, I mean, okay, fine. Yeah, in our love for Krishna, also it may cause pain sometimes, but that pain also is ecstatic. Anyway, now I will go deeper into that. I mean, to justify, you know, why I haven't found anything higher than that so far. You see, Prabhupada's teachings is nothing new. Prabhupada's teachings is actually the sublime essence of the entire Vedic understanding, the way it has been given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So through Prabhupada, we don't only get the information about God, Krishna. We get God's situation in different spheres of spiritual domain. Like he is there in the spiritual sky as Brahma Jyoti. You know, it's his bodily effulgence. Then beyond Brahma Jyoti, there are spiritual planets, Vaikuntha. There the Lord is present as Narayan. Then the higher region of Vaikuntha is Ayodhya, where the same Narayan is Lord Ramchandra. Then, even higher than Ayodhya is Dwarka, where the same Narayan, same Ramchandra is Krishna Chandra, Dwarkadhish. But then beyond Ayodhya, beyond Dwarka, beyond Vaikuntha, there is the topmost region of the spiritual sky, where Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is a cowherd boy. And that is the Lord's original identity. And there he has relationships with his devotees. A kind of relationships that are not available anywhere else, and that cannot be possible anywhere else. Those relationships are friendship, parental, and conjugal. These relationships are not available even in Dwarka. What to speak of Ayodhya and Vaikuntha. And why in Vrindavan the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because he is enabling his devotees to develop a relationship in these three mellows: friendship, parental, and conjugal. And in order to develop that, or in order to enable them to develop this relationship, he had to stop being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because these relationships are not possible with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can, if the friendship is among equals, right? Friendship can happen only between equals. Now who can become equal to God? Right? Parental, the parents are superior and the child is inferior or junior, right? So there, you know, how can, you know, God becomes, you know, junior, subordinate, and the devotee can be superior to him? And then the conjugal relationship, and in conjugal relationship, you know, like, so that's why, you know, in that region, in Vrindavan, Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he is Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is not acting like a Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is acting like just like a cowherd boy, ordinary, you know, cowherd village boy. Right? So, there cannot be any situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead higher than that. That's why, although I say that if you have anything higher than what Prabhupada gave, then I am prepared to accept it. Although I say that, but I know that there is nothing higher than that. Vaishnava etiquette is for everybody. Like it's for all of us. When it comes to Vaishnava platform, we all are servants of Krishna, irrespective of in what form of body we may be in. It's not only human bodies, male body, female body, whole body. Even in an animal body, one can be a servant of Krishna, like Hanuman. Right? But the concept of Vaishnava etiquette applies to all, because it is transcendental to the physical condition. It is for, it's relative to the spiritual identity. Right? So that's another thing, like, you know, what understanding can be higher than this, where one transcends all material considerations and comes onto the spiritual platform. Yes, yeah. But dharma has different aspects. Actually, the Sanskrit word dharma, the synonymous expression in English is religion. But the word religion does not clearly define the way dharma actually defines. And again, you know, when you look at dharma, then dharma is the ultimate science of the spiritual reality, dharma is the ultimate law, dharma. Buddhism? Buddhism is actually a temporary doctrine presented by the Lord Himself in order to bewilder some troublemakers. Yeah, it is a dharma, but it is, you know, like, it is not the ultimate dharma, it's a sad-dharma, it's not the eternal dharma. It's non-violence. Those who are violent, right, for them, you know, to become non-violent is a progress. But that, just becoming non-violent is not a return, you know. Like, there is something much superior to that. And another thing is that what Buddhism, you see, like, a child is creating a lot of problems. The mother says, okay, go to sleep. At least when he's asleep, he'll start making the trouble. So, similarly, as I said, troublemakers, the Lord came and gave them the doctrine that, okay, fall asleep, right? Falling asleep is the ultimate goal. Like, that's what Buddhism is saying, you know. Their concept is that all the problems are, all the sufferings are due to our consciousness. So when you stop being conscious, there won't be any suffering. Yes.
Maharaj, I had a very, you can call very stupid question or whatever. Modern scientists say that every person should have 8 to 10 hours of sleep every day. I'm just saying modern scientists say. I'm not saying it is established or anything.
Whether they say or not, they do. They do sleep for 8 to 10 hours a day.
They sleep only like 4 to 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
Then they wake up and they sleep. And I feel very energetic when I wake up, and throughout the day I am very energetic. But people around me keep telling me,
Are you insinuating my husband?
It's not pointed to anybody in particular, but there are many people who keep telling me, see, and whenever there's a, and we hear it almost every other week on the TV or, you know, news, that sleeping 8 to 10 hours a day is the answer. So could you please clarify on that?
I mean, you actually answered the question as well. Like, what is the need for sleeping? The sleep is necessary to rejuvenate the body. You see, body is a big burden that the soul is carrying. Isn't it? Consider the soul, what's the size of the soul? 1/10,000 part of the tip of the hair. And for the poor little soul to carry the big hulk of the body, I mean, you can well imagine how strenuous it is. So he is a poor guy, carries it. At some point he said, well, I can't carry it anymore. He just, you know, dumps that, you know, weight that he is carrying. And then he takes a little rest. But then again, he picks it up and carries on. And that's how it goes on and on and on, day after day.
May I just add to this thing? I have the same problem. I never get tired. Never get tired.
You're fortunate, sir.
Never. I can stay without you.
That's very nice.
And when I tried to understand that, I came into this whole chakra. Now, Prabhupada never talked about this chakra, opening of chakra. So the answer I get, my chakra is open. Therefore I don't need sleep and I don't need anything. I don't know how to find the answer there. The Krishna consciousness doesn't talk about the chakra. As far as I know.
Yeah, Krishna consciousness doesn't talk about the subject because it's not important. It's a side effect. You know? The chakra opening, you see, as your consciousness develops, you know, chakra naturally open up. So, so that's why the Prabhupada didn't feel any need about that. And besides that, you know, like, it is another branch of yoga that deal with that. And anyway, but you know, that doesn't, Prabhupada didn't speak about it, but that doesn't mean that Prabhupada didn't accept it. It is a Vedic understanding. And but because it is not relevant to our cultivation, that's why there is no need. So the thing is that now what actually happens at the time of sleep? Do you know? I make a condition generally before the class. I may have done that here also, that those who have mobile phones, and if your mobile phone rings, then you will be rewarded. We'll give you a reward, and that reward will be that you have the opportunity to sponsor the next Sunday feast. So those who want to accept that reward, please keep your cell phone wide open. Yes, sir. Yeah, what actually happens when you fall asleep? Do you know? There are three stages. One is wakeful stage, and the other is dream stage, and the third one is deep sleep. That is dreamless sleep. You see, wakeful state is when our consciousness is awake in this material reality, material nature. At that point, both the gross body and the subtle body are functioning. Because we deal with the material nature through our gross body, through our senses. We see, we hear, we smell, we taste, we touch. And that is how we deal with this nature. And then we have our working senses, hands, legs, etc. So this is how we become involved through the body and the 10 senses here. But then when this gross body becomes inactive, but the subtle body continues to function, that is a dream state. When the gross body is awake, then that is the wakeful state. When gross body becomes inactive, but the subtle body is active, that's the dream state. And when both gross and subtle body become inactive, that is the dreamless sleep, or Sushupti. So at Sushupti, what actually happens, the soul comes very close to the super soul. And that is why sleep is so necessary. For a living entity, for the soul, it is necessary to become rejuvenated by coming in contact with the super soul. And that's why sleep is so relieving, sleep is so enlivening. Especially dreamless sleep, when both gross and subtle body are inactive. Now, you see, it is like the sleep, the wakeful state, dream state, sleep state. What actually happens, after sleep, we wake up again on this side of the material nature. But if we can somehow wake up on the other side of the other side, where will we find ourselves? We'll find ourselves in spiritual nature. But we can't wake up in that reality because of our entanglement and attachment to this material nature. So anyway, the point is, you know, sleep is necessary, but how long you sleep is not important. Right? How well you sleep, that is what is important. Sometimes you'll notice just about 10-15 minutes of nap during the day just wakes you up, rejuvenates you so wonderfully. But sometimes, you may be sleeping for 12 hours and you, especially, when people drink and get a hangover, they sleep for 10, 12 hours and wake up and they still feel groggy. So, for how long one sleeps is not important. What is important is how well one sleeps. And then, you see, ultimately, it's also a consideration of how much you are involved in the materialistic activity. The more involved you become in materialistic activities, longer sleep will need. But less involved you become in materialistic activities, less sleep will need. Like you'll notice, I notice that as I'm getting older and older, I need less and less sleep. At night, 3-4 hours sleep is good enough. So, for how long you are sleeping is not important. How well you, how closer you came to Krishna, that's what really matters. Yes? Yeah, super soul? Okay. You see, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know that. Yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And He is the Supreme Father. Right? The Supreme Father of everyone, because we all are His parts and parcels. Now, when the father who cares for his child so much, because of his concern for the child, he goes with the child wherever the child goes, right? The child goes to play in the field, the father goes with the child, right? The child is playing with his friends, father is sitting there on a bench watching the child, right? Waiting for the child to come back to him and he'll take him back home. So similarly, our Supreme Father Krishna is so concerned about his children that wherever the children goes, he goes with them. And he has many children, and also he has inconceivable potency, and with that inconceivable potency he expands himself to as many children as there are, right? So wherever the children go, Krishna also goes with them. So that aspect of Krishna is the super soul. So living entities have left him, came to the material nature, right? Like a child plays in the field, away from home, because he wants to be with his friends and have some fun. Krishna is allowing us to have some fun here. But wherever we are going, Krishna is just going with us. And he is waiting when you are going to turn towards him and tell him, "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" So when you call out to him, then he'll come and pick us up. Say, "Come, let's go home now." And that's the super soul.
This is about the case. In this case, my senses are drawn, so there is no mind. I cannot perceive the world. Let's say, for example, if there is a big sound, what is witnessing the sound and waking up my mind? Hey, there is some sound. Now you pick up your senses, you hear that and wake up.
Yeah. The sound wakes up your sleeping mind. And along with the mind, it wakes up the body, and the senses become active, and then it registers it and reacts.
But there is no mind in this case.
No, it's not that no mind. Mind is there, but the mind is not active. Right? But the sound makes the mind active. Right? It wakes up the mind. Right?
So spiritual vision and dreams, spiritual vision still in Sushupti or the also beyond?
It will depend. In Sushupti you don't see anything, because in Sushupti the consciousness is completely dormant. But spiritual vision, the difference between spiritual vision and dream is that both are beyond normal level. Say, if our conscious state in the material nature, the wakeful state, is the level, then a normal level, then dreams are subnormal, right, or abnormal, below normal. We are actually, it is, as it is, this material nature is a phantasmagoria, right, illusory. And dreams are the reflection of that reflection. Right? Whereas the spiritual visions are the perception of the reality. So, you see, reality, reflection, and the reflection of the reflection. So the reflection is the what we call normal. So that way, this one is subnormal. Dream is a reflection of that reflection. Because what you are dreaming is what you have experienced in our material nature. And So this is subnormal, and the spiritual reality in that relationship is supernormal, beyond normal. Right? Now, two opposite extremes may look alike, like sunrise and sunset. Two opposite extremes look alike. Therefore, we may judge it from the wakeful state or normal state, as we call it. Then dream and spiritual vision may appear to be alike, but they are diametrically opposed. The spiritual, fine, good point, yeah. How do we define? One thing is that the spiritual visions are spiritual, relative to spiritual perceptions, and dreams are relative to material perception. Okay, another way to judge whether it's a dream or spiritual vision. When you have a spiritual vision, will experience an indescribable joy within, which you want in case of a dream. So that is how we can decide what, which one is spiritual vision and which one is dream. No, even when you are dreaming, when you are perceiving it. When you perceive the spiritual vision, your heart will become filled with an indescribable joy that you never experienced before. Okay, so should we? Oh yeah. Why can't we have a sikha in the front? Because the center is a better part. The front is a corner, the edge. Whereas back is where the center of the head is, or the growth of your hair, where is the center? So when you want to create a nice antenna, where do you want to have it? Yes?
It would depend, you know.
See, a person who has been spiritually advanced, for him how he lives his body doesn't really matter. Because, first of all, he is not in his subtle body. Right? Say, for example, Rishabhdev, an incarnation of the Lord, he died. I mean, he left his body in a forest fire. Accidental death, like what happened? Did he become a ghost? Obviously not. Like that, you know, Abhimanyu, Krishna's own nephew. What a terrible end of life. But what happened? He went back to spiritual sky. So for devotees, it doesn't matter. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forbade for a devotee to commit suicide, like he told Sanatana Goswami. Samadhi means going into a trance. Oh yes, Santosh. Why we go dream? Well, as I said, like a dream is a reflection of a reflection. This material nature is a reflection of the spiritual reality. And dream is a reflection of this reality. So, does a reflection have any relevance? No. So, it's like that, you know, like even our material existence,
what is the relevance? Only purpose of our existence in material nature, only objective, is to finish off our business here and go back to the spiritual sky. Mm. Now, why do you dream, as you asked? Because of our entanglement in the material nature, that because of that entanglement, that even when we are withdrawn from this material nature, still we dwell in that material nature, in our subtle body. This movement, so